Welcome to Citizens Climate Radio. In this show, we highlight people's stories, we celebrate your successes, and together we share strategies for talking about climate change. I'm your host, Peter Santoscano. Welcome to episode 38 of Citizens Climate Radio, a project of Citizens Climate Education. This episode is airing on Saturday, July 27th, 2019. Poet Liz Gonzalez joins us in the Art House. She's a fourth-generation Southern Californian. Through her poetry, Liz seeks to capture the beauty and the challenges of a rapidly changing landscape. Liz also speaks about the difficulties of raising social justice issues through art. You will also hear our monthly puzzler question. When you think of climate change, what color do you think of? What sound does it evoke? But first, I want to introduce you to a sports nut who is passionate about taking on climate change. Meet Lou Blaustein. Lou has loved sports since he was a boy growing up in the suburbs of New York City. It was a passion he refused to give up even when he realized he wasn't ever going to become a professional athlete.
I wasn't going to make my living doing that. And so I became the geeky kid who like knew all the sports stats. So if you need to know, you know, what the lineup of the 1969-70 New York Knicks was, starters and reserves, I'm your guy. Why you would need to know this, I don't know. But this is the type of stuff that sticks in my mind. And so then I went, you know, again, trying for sports casting and then couldn't make a go of it. And so then I went and got my MBA at NYU, thinking I would get into the sports business, and it took a circuitous route after that, but I finally did get into it.
After college, Lou was settled in the sports business world in New York City. Then, like many New Yorkers, his life changed dramatically in one day.
WNYW here, live coverage here of this amazing picture we're getting from Lower Manhattan. Two planes, one hitting each of the Twin Towers at the World Trade Center.
They come by and they say, what happened? What happened? And you just got to say something hit the building and then something hit both buildings.
I felt like this was the Pearl Harbor of our generation. And I was fortunate that I didn't know anybody in the buildings, but I felt like I had to do something. I just didn't know what that was. Then Tom Friedman in the New York Times wrote a column, Green is the New Red, White, and Blue. And he posited, because we were 4% of the world's population at the time, 25% of the world's energy use, we were fueling insanely the wars we were fighting on terrorism. And it was like the compact fluorescent light bulb, because there were no LEDs at the time, went on above my head. And so I went out and bought a hybrid car. I changed out all my light bulbs and I went almost vegetarian, and that worked for a few months. And then I said, you know what? I got to do this with my work.
But what work could Lou do that would promote green energy?
I was an ad sales, biz dev, marketing guy. I was not someone you want, for example, to be on your roof putting solar panels on top of it. You don't want me anywhere near the roof.
Drawing on his strengths in marketing and business, Lou decided to use the skills he acquired in sports business to promote green technology.
I thought there would be a need for someone who could tell and sell green stories. So I went off in 2005 as a consultant, marketing, biz dev, communications, but instead of sports, in the green world.
Lou couldn't let go of his love of sports, though. He wondered how he could combine that passion for sports with his growing passion to promote clean energy. 4 years after he plunged into the world of promoting green solutions, Lou began to make connections to the sports world.
What if there's an intersection of green and sports? That would be very cool for me, the marriage of my two passions. And I started poking around and found out there was a group that at that time was only in the Pacific Northwest, called the Pacific Northwest Green Sports Alliance. And there were stadium and arena people talking about how to recycle better, et cetera, et cetera. And that mushroomed into the Green Sports Alliance, which now has 400 or 500 members, and all the major sports leagues are in it. And sports greening has become a thing since about the mid-2000s.
Lou then started a blog, which has become the go-to place to keep track of the growing green sports movement. Later this year, Lou will also launch the Green Sports Pod podcast. While the green sports niche is small, sports are huge globally. Lou believes the sports world can play a huge role in taking on the biggest issue of them all, climate change.
Mike Trout of the Anaheim Angels, best player in baseball, he recently signed a $400+ million 12-year contract extension. 12 years is also what the IPCC said is the time frame that humanity has to reduce our carbon footprint by 45%. Basically, Mike Trout's contract. We need to let fans know this and know what the teams that they love are doing, and show them how they can do something similar on their own, and to engage their friends to do it. Because we need to get the masses of people who follow sports, and that's the power of sports, right? 65 to 70% of humans follow sports, to engage on positive climate action, positive environmental action. And that is where we are now. And the thing is, we only have the length of Mike Trout's contract, so we better get going.
For the past 15 years, professional sports has embraced green technologies and practices.
Green Sports 1.0 has been ongoing since around 2004-ish, 2005. And what do I mean by that? By that, I mean the greening of the games themselves. So that could include advanced recycling programs at stadiums, composting, back of house, front of house. So, and if you go to a Yankees game, I'm in New York City, and you go to a Yankees game, when you're done with your food, there's no trash bin. It's either recycling or composting. So many stadiums, both pro and college, now are what's called zero waste. And to be termed zero waste, that means you divert 90% or more of your waste from landfill. And increasing numbers of stadiums and also events like marathons and such are getting to zero waste level or close to. You also have energy efficient lights. LEDs are increasingly becoming the norm. LEED certified stadiums and arenas, or in Europe, BREEAM, which is a British equivalent, again, are becoming the norm rather than the exception. And so this has been happening. And so almost any new stadium project or arena project that is undertaken now, it's not like, are you going to become LEED? It's, are you going to go for silver, gold, or platinum? Which level?
Lou now sees a shift to a new, more robust phase.
The infancy of Green Sports 2.0, which is engaging fans, because, you know, we have a massive climate crisis, right?
Beyond changing the individual behavior of fans, though, Lou wants a larger response, one that will bring about policy change. He sees sports figures as potential catalysts for bringing about greater awareness, leading to political action.
In the same way Muhammad Ali advocated against the Vietnam War, or in the same way that Billie Jean King advocated for women's rights, and later on for LGBTQ rights, or going back to Jackie Robinson breaking the color barrier, there needs to be that eco-athlete moment, or many moments, where athletes who have these tremendous followings can shepherd those followings to advocate for policy action.
Over on greensportsblog.com, you will see that one of the policy actions Lou reports on regularly is carbon fee and dividend. He keeps tabs on sports figures, teams, and organizations who have endorsed the policy. Last month, we featured Milwaukee Brewers pitcher Brent Suter, who publicly announced his endorsement of carbon fee and dividend on the Green Sports blog.
He gets it. He comes from the heartland. He sees the problem. He sees ways that athletes can engage on it. We need more Brent Suters, and that is one of my main missions with the blog, is to find more eco-athletes and to get them a platform. He is great, but he's not the only one. Kevin Anderson, who is right now, because he's been injured, is the eighth-ranked men's tennis player in the world. And Dominic Thiem, as we're talking now, the fourth-ranked men's tennis player in the world, are both very much into the plastic ocean waste issue. And I find that that's a great way to get athletes into the environmental issue. That's an on-ramp to climate. So those two fellows are very into it. Then we have a retired NFL Pro Bowl, which is all-star level player, Ovi Muhaili, who played for the Atlanta Falcons and the Baltimore Ravens, who's doing great work. And in fact, he's creating a comic strip with an environmental superhero as the main character. Brilliant idea. And there are a bunch of others, but Brent is among the best.
Lou predicts we will see more and more athletes take on this issue as we experience more and more extreme weather events.
J.J. Watt of the Houston Texans, who got an ESPY award for his humanitarian relief work in Houston during Hurricane Harvey. You know, athletes down in Puerto Rico. But you're going to be seeing more athletes engaging on climate as these incidents of extreme weather continue to accelerate the number and the intensity of them.
But there are obstacles that keep athletes from talking about issues like climate change. For one, they risk being seen as too political.
What is holding the number of eco-athletes back, I think, is less the politics, although it's a factor, no question, but more education. They have a 3 to 4 year career average. They got to focus on their sport. If they're going to get involved in a cause, and most do in some way, shape, or form, they want to do something that's fairly simple. Cancer. You don't have to be a cancer specialist to talk about cancer. You know you're against it. Or access to sports for kids, or whatever the causes that athletes take on. Climate change, yes, it's seen as political, but even more so, it's seen as scientific. They feel like they need to know more about it. They're reticent to talk about it. And so there needs to be an effort to educate athletes about how to talk about climate without being an expert. And I think that is totally doable, and we'll get more of them and get more of them quickly if when we do this.
Since you are listening to this podcast, you are likely someone who is concerned about climate change. You're already engaged in doing something about it. These days, it seems, though, that people still don't want to talk about climate change. I recently spent a weekend at a festival with dozens of speakers, artists, and activists. Almost no one mentioned climate change. It was like I was on another planet, one that isn't warming. Talking about climate change, seeking solutions, this can feel like a hero's journey. At times, we feel overwhelmed and outnumbered, like we are the underdogs with all the odds against us. I know I can feel that way, like I am one of a handful of people who care about this issue. But then, I meet people like Lou Blaustein and Brent Suter, or Indy race car driver Aaron Tillotts, who appeared on episode 18 of this show. I feel hopeful when I chat with professional skier Angel Cullinson, who spoke about climate denial back in episode 5. Angel is part of a group called Protect Our Winters. Along with many fellow winter sports athletes, Angel has been talking to lawmakers about climate change for years.
Protect Our Winters was visiting Washington, D.C. It was right before the Clean Power Plan was going through the works and getting approved. So we were meeting with certain key senators and legislators to say, hey, we support this and we support you. Please vote for climate, support the Clean Power Plan. So while we're trying to get in with these different senators, I didn't know who Bernie Sanders was at the time, but we were supposed to meet with him. He was busy and we ran into him in the hall. And he's like, oh, hey guys, how's it going? He was so personable. I was like, this guy's amazing. We asked him what we should do with people whose stance was that climate change wasn't happening. And he had a really interesting response. He was like, everyone in Washington knows that it's a real thing. There's no one that actually thinks that it's not happening. It's all just politics and, you know, different obligations and money, but no one actually believes that it's not happening. And I was like, whoa, that totally changes it for me.
There is a growing group of professional athletes taking on climate change. They are reaching out to their fans and followers. They are connecting with people who probably would not accept the same message coming from me, no matter how well I phrase it. Climate communication specialist George Marshall wrote the book, Don't Even Think About It, Why Our Brains Are Wired to Ignore Climate Change. Over and over, he makes this one point. People do not listen to messages. They listen to people who they trust and with whom they identify. That is why I am thrilled when religious leaders, entertainers, and business people open up about climate change. I celebrate whenever I hear conservatives, outdoor sports enthusiasts, and farmers speak out about climate change. I can't reach everyone. But there are people out there who can reach their people. I am especially excited about this growing movement of athletes speaking out about climate change. Even though I am not an athlete and do not follow any team myself, I am moved by that classic underdog story.
One thing athletes have is this idea of overcoming obstacles, right? What is a great sports movie, but a movie where you're down in the last quarter or in the last inning and then you come back? So sports is uniquely positioned for people to say, hey, we've got these huge existential crisis level problems, but we have solutions and we're athletes. We know how to solve problems and overcome obstacles. And so that's why sports has a tremendous potential power here.
I encourage you to check out greensportsblog.com. You can subscribe to it so you get updates to what is happening in the sports world. Later this year, Lou will launch the Green Sports Pod podcast. And there are plenty more ways to connect with Lou and his work.
You can follow us on Twitter at Green Sports Blog, and you can friend us on Facebook, facebook.com/Green Sports Blog.
Now it is time for the Art House. We regularly feature writers in the Art House, and joining us today is a lifelong Californian who writes about her home through poetry and creative nonfiction.
My name is Liz Gonzalez, and my name is written all lowercase. The A has an accent over it, but sometimes the computer technology makes it into an odd symbol, so it's okay to leave it off. I live in Long Beach, Southern California, and I'm a fourth generation Southern Californian. I grew up in the San Bernardino Valley,
which is famous for the Santa Ana winds.
Well, we do get different winds here, but the Santa Ana winds blow very hard. I don't know the exact miles per hour, but they can go very fast. They dig up dust and dirt and tumbleweeds, and they have reactions to it. They have a hard time, their allergies, it dries the air. Joan Didion and Raymond Chandler describe the Santa Ana winds and say that it leads people to want to kill people, which is a myth I don't like that they put on there, that, you know, people get very grumpy. And I do think that some people get grumpy because it impacts people's allergies and such. But they're very powerful.
These winds are shifting in part because of climate change.
They used to occur mostly only in fall, and now they occur from around September all through the spring. And they're on and off. The Santa Ana winds can last for a week or a little bit shorter or a little bit longer.
These winds inspired Liz to write the book, Dancing in the Santa Ana Winds. Liz paints pictures with her words. Hearing her read from the book, I immediately want to see the effects of these winds and feel them.
Most everything dances in the Santa Anas. Bunches of purple needle grass glimmering on hillsides bend in a sideways mountain yoga pose. Dried sycamore leaves get dragged over sidewalks. Their tips scratch the cement like claws. Palm tree fronds thrash like diehard headbangers. Freed tumbleweeds bounce across streets with reckless abandon. Bougainvillea petals and camellia blossoms fly off branches and scatter across the lawn like confetti bursting from cracked cascarones at an Easter celebration. When the Santa Anas have mellowed, some of us head to one of the nearby hiking trails. At the top of a hill, we pause and inhale deep the clear view of mountains, high rises, and Pacific Ocean, Southern California in all its glory.
I first discovered Liz when reading the anthology of poetry Fire and Rain, Echo Poetry of California. Liz has a poem in the book that shows strong forces bumping up against each other. Liz told me, though, this poem is not just about climate and weather.
I used the Santa Ana winds and the chaparral as a metaphor for my husband and I. When we first moved in together, we were very headstrong, and we got together later in life and had both been single until we were both in our late 30s. And we moved in, and we were the eldest in our family, and so our heads butt. Our fights weren't violent the way that I described this, but it felt like the Santa Ana winds to me. It felt like what the Santa Ana winds did to nature. And so this poem was born of that experience. This poem is on page 103 of Fire and Rain, Echo Poetry of California. Fall in the chaparral. Santa Ana winds howl down Cajon Pass. I sleep on the edge, my side of the bed, not to disturb. You snore on the couch. Gusts plow calico-hued hillside. Filigree bones of a scrub jay's wing snuggle in the shadow box you made to save the memory. Flailing yucca swords slash the moonlight. A battery-operated clock glows on the mantle. Electricity is unreliable during winds and quakes. Bitter breeze whistles through window cracks. Your Granny Smith's rot in the glued-back-together anniversary bowl. You don't notice the smell. Brittle brush boughs, Christmas berry slants, rattles. I scrub pomegranate specks off the carpet before you spot them. A coyote crouches behind beaver tail cactus, ready to pounce on a jackrabbit. We waste hours bickering like tumbleweed bouncing aimlessly in the cactus garden. Dry leaves crumble so easily veins can't sustain them. Our tromps back and forth shake the wood floor, startle snakes slithering beneath the foundation. Manzanita bushes thrash as though they want to uproot and bolt. We snap our love like weak branches, cracking off eucalyptus trees. You brush shards of us into a dustpan. Add a spark to the drying landscape, uncontrollable wildfire will result. Flames cleanse the soil of allelopathic compounds. Clear space for new growth. Buds curl dry on branches. Cinder does not disintegrate. We toast Thanksgiving from opposite ends of our new glass table. Fall quickens.
The artists I feature in the Art House regularly tell me how difficult it is to do art around climate change. French novelist Gustave Flaubert said, "You don't make art out of good intentions." In chatting with Liz, I hear how passionate she is about climate change and social justice. So I asked her why these topics don't come up more in her writing.
I'm not good at writing social justice type of work. It has to just happen naturally. I can't sit down and decide that I'm going to write it. It always ends up sounding preachy, and there are people who do it so much better.
Knowing how much Liz's world is filled with pollution, disease, and decay, I find her poetry about nature very moving. We live in a compromised world. Our natural spaces suffer because of the strain we have put on the earth. Liz writes about a natural world that is delicate, fleeting, at risk, and yet relentlessly resilient. You can learn more about Liz Gonzalez and her published works over at her website. Visit lizgonzalezwriter.wordpress.com. That's spelled LIZGONZALEZ. lizgonzalezwriter.wordpress.com. Or you can just get a link to Liz's website and much more over at our show notes. Visit citizensclimatelobby.org/blog. That's citizensclimatelobby.org/blog. If you have an idea for the Art House, feel free to contact me, radio@citizensclimate.org. Now it is time for our monthly puzzler question. Last month I had a weird one. What color do you associate with climate change and why? Or what sound do you associate with climate change and why? On our Facebook page, I received the following responses. Jeff Jocelyn said the color red, the color of NOAA charts when the temperatures are really hot and creating records, the color of fire, the warning color, the color that says stop CO2. Gail Spock, the yellow-brown of parched earth, unable to support life, the heaviness of silence as birdsong is stilled and there is no one to rustle a leaf. I also received a voicemail from John Clark in Pennsylvania.
The color I most associate with climate change is orange. Orange is the color associated with heat most of the time. And also the sound, kind of for the same reason for heat. Sound would be calving glaciers. Heat melting the glaciers is making them crack apart. And so I see a lot of news stories about, you know, calving glaciers, and that rumbling and cracking sound of glaciers is probably the sound that I most associate with climate change.
Thank you to everyone who responded. Are you ready for the new puzzler question? Here goes. On Facebook, you connected with a childhood friend, Lydia. She has become worried about climate change. Lydia is wondering what she can do right now to prepare for the effects of climate change. While she admires your work in mitigating climate change, she feels a growing interest in adaptation. Lydia asks you, what are ways I can help my community to get ready for climate change? This is a big question, and hopefully the beginning of a larger discussion about climate adaptation. What are some ideas you have for Lydia? Where might she start in adapting to climate change? Send me your answers, leave your name, contact info, and where you're from. Get back to me by August 15th, 2019. You can email your answers to radio@citizensclimate.org. That's radio@citizensclimate.org. You can also leave a voicemail message of 3 minutes or less at the following number, 518-595-9414, plus one if calling from outside the USA. That number again, 518-595-9414. Thank you for listening to this episode of Citizens Climate Radio. The show is written and produced by me, Peter Santoscano. I receive other technical support from Ricky Bradley and Brett Cease. Social media assistance from Ashley Hunt Monterano, Flannery Winchester, and Steve Volk. Moral support from Madeline Para. Please share Citizens Climate Radio with your friends. You can find us wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also listen at northernspiritradio.org. Join the discussion at our Facebook group page, facebook.com/groups/citizensclimateradio. And if you're on Twitter, follow us at CitizensCRadio. Feel free to tweet at me too. You can reach me at P2Sun, the letter P, the number 2, S-O-N. Visit citizensclimatelobby.org/blog to see info about our puzzler and find links to our guests. Citizens Climate Radio is a project of Citizens Climate Education.